Why are you laughing?
You have any tokens for the machine down the street?
Welcome to the Why Are You Laughing podcast!
Boom! Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we are back. I'm sorry I didn't put out an episode for the last 2 weeks because I am a bum. But obviously, you've made it back. Thank you very much once again for tuning in. This is a Why Are You Laughing podcast. And I don't even know how to start this episode because it makes me want to cry. I have a very honored guest, and I hope to call a friend very soon, maybe even after the show. Mr. Steve Simone, comedian and awesome dude all the way around. Steve, thanks for coming on, brother.
Dude, thanks for having me. I'm sorry we had so many technical difficulties, and I got home late, and then I tried to make the link work, and now I have to hold my phone up, and I look like a LA girl, like taking a picture with my, like, you know,
selfies.
So yeah, exactly. That sad
no,
selfie,
man,
pose.
Not at all. It's blowing me off would not be the worst thing in the world. I think a lot of people would follow you there.
Wow. Wait till you're the biggest star in Hollywood. You know how Judd Apatow got started, right? Just by interviewing comics.
Yes. And who was the first one he interviewed? I just was watching this.
Might have been Shandling. I'm not sure. I know he was very, very, very tight with Gary Shandling.
Dude, I just watched that Dinner with Don Rickles thing that they had on the RP.
Dude, Don Rickles and Gary Shandling are two of my all-time favorite comics.
Don is the epitome. Like, every time I watch, I'm never not watching him. There's always a week where I pull something up and it just makes me die laughing every single time.
Like, he's on my Mount Rushmore. And what I love most about Rickles is the sweetness. Like, what a beautiful gift Don Rickles had to say something vicious, but in such a loving way that you knew it was a hug. Like, that's what makes him a legend. And the fact that, him and Bob Newhart were best buddies.
A dynamic duo right there.
Yeah, and they approached comedy from such different angles, but they both had that innate sweetness. Like, Ari Shaffir is one of my dearest friends. And brilliant. If you just look at his comedy, it's so different from mine. But he's such a sweet guy. Like, when Ari came to stay with me and my parents, it was like, they love him. My mom still talks about Ari.
That's awesome.
When's Ari coming again? I want to cook for him.
That's great, man.
It's the best.
Yeah, I think about your career. By the way, I just want to tell you. That Tesla bit about, like, families in LA, I was crying.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks,
dude.
That's hilarious. I just saw that today. If you want to see some really funny stuff, go check out Steve Simone Comedy on Instagram and every platform. But
thanks, buddy.
Absolutely. And so when I think about your career and your style of comedy, you know, you're like one of the DOCs of comedy. There's not a lot of cleaner comics out there anymore other than probably Gabriel and you. And, I mean, I can't think of really too many anymore. So how did you get that about yourself? What made you want to do that?
That's a good question. Because when I got started, I was filthy. Like a lot of young comics. Yeah. Because, like, one of my all-time favorite comedians is Andrew Dice Clay. And he was so filthy.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's what you do. Like, I don't know. I think a lot of it was nerves for me personally. But then as I started to just spend, you know, get more, it's the toughest thing for a comic, right? Is stage time. Okay. Like, that's what people that don't do this understand. That, like, it could literally take years to have the opportunity to not get paid for 6 minutes of stand-up on a real show.
Right.
Like, people don't get that.
And that's why, you know, the Comedy Store, which is where you started, correct? Am I right?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's, you know, that's why Mitchie Shore was such a genius, because it's like they made you go up there and then made you a regular. Like, you were in.
Oh, yeah. Like, it took me almost 8 years to become a regular.
Wow.
And I think I broke Shandling's record. And I remember asking, because I was Mitzi's personal assistant. Exactly. And I remember once. Yeah, I have so many stories. But I remember once, like, I saw, like, you would have to showcase for her, meaning, like, you'd go perform 3 minutes of comedy for her.
Yeah.
And then my job, I had to showcase for her to see if I was going to become a paid regular, the term for like a real comedian at the Comedy Store. Sure. Then I would have to drive her home. And that was an awkward conversation. So I'm like, so Mitzi, you see anybody tonight that maybe you think is a star? Right? And I do remember once, like, if she didn't like you, she would have everybody's name on a list and she'd sit in the back of the room and she would just look. And if she liked you, she would circle your name. That meant you were passed. She didn't like you. She scratched your name out. Right.
Oh, that feels good.
Oh, once this
standing next to her doing.
Oh, I have this is even worse. There's one of the best comedians. That's very sadly, he passed before comedy really came back, before anybody really got to see his genius. But there was a comedian, he had influenced just about everybody at the Comedy Store. His name was Freddie Soto. And he died very young.
That was your good buddy, right? That you and
Ari. He was like a mentor to me, Ari, Renazizi, that whole crew of guys. Because like in the early 2000s, nobody at the Comedy Store was really working. Freddie was working. Mm-hmm. So anyway, one Sunday night, Mitzi was going to, you know, she was supposed to showcase, but Mitzi loved that TV show, Sex and the City. And so she would just stay at home and watch that and wouldn't come down and watch comedians. Even though you were supposed to showcase, it was just a free set. So there was probably like four people in the audience. It was the dead years of the Comedy Store. I mean, literally, sometimes there wasn't enough. There was no audience.
Yeah.
There was nobody. And then we would need six to start a show. And then they brought it down to four to start. And some nights they didn't start the show. Anyway, it was maybe a very small crowd. And I'm like, good thing Mitzi's not going to be here for the showcase. And then Freddie was going to host.
Yeah.
He wanted us all to get past. And in front of like, I don't know, realistically, maybe 10 people scattered throughout the room. I remember just going to be like, what am I going to do for 10 people? Like, that's not an audience. That's not comedy. Because pretty much everything I was doing at the time, I was a baby comic. And everything was just like high energy silliness. Mm. You know, like Pauly Shore was gracious enough and kind enough to let me open up for him on the road.
That's right.
And he would have sold out shows. And I would MC. It was usually for many years, it was me, then Bobby Lee, then Pauly Shore. And I would just go out and open up the show, but like not really doing jokes. I didn't have any material, but I would just get by on personality and energy. And I would act like an 80s heavy metal singer and be like, let me see your cigarette lighters, Los Angeles. Are you ready to rock? Like a real idiot.
When'd you become a leprechaun during that?
Yeah, exactly. After two pints of Guinness.
Right.
I'm on there. So there's 12 people. I'm like, you can't do that for 12 people. And Mitzi's in the back of the room. And then I remember thinking, I gave myself the worst advice you can in that situation. I remember looking at the room, looking at Mitzi, and Freddie's about to call my name. And I just told myself, like really confidently, I said, just do what you do. Wow. And I walked out on stage and I said, what's up, Los Angeles? Let me see your cigarette lighters. And the audience does nothing. And it was so quiet. It was so quiet. You could hear Mitzi scratching my name off the list. She's in the back of the room. I'm on stage and it's here.
I bet you heard it like a pin drop.
Oh, I was like, I guess my dreams aren't coming true tonight. Then there were nights I murdered in front of her. And I remember one night I was her assistant and I crushed. And not only did she have my name circled, but she had stars around it. I should have stolen that piece of paper. Oh, it was circled with stars. And I'm like, if circle's good, circle with three stars even got to be better.
Bro, I feel like if that happened to anybody when Mitzi was alive, they would have put that in the frame.
Yeah, but it was hers. What am I going to clip it? I don't even know what clip means. I've just heard Brett Ernst use that. I don't even think I used it properly.
Joey says that all the time, too.
Joey Diaz.
Never clip that.
It's hysterical. They're two of the sweetest guys in the world. Two of the funniest, sweetest guys.
Oh my God.
So anyway, Mitzi winds up telling, I had to ask her who was the nicest guy to go through the Comedy Store. And she was like, oh, Gary. Gary Shandling. And she told me these amazing Shandling stories, but she made him wait for it like 7 or 8 years. And 7 years, I think, for Shandling. Me, 8. And then I remember when she told me that, that he was really nice, I made the connection that it was going to be many years until I got passed at the Comedy Store.
So eventually you do, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I didn't start working clean, but to answer your question, that was a roundabout way. So I get passed at the Comedy Store. I start to evolve. In 2006, a great comedian by the name of Steve Trevino was doing like his first real headlining tour. Mm-hmm. And he was my roommate and buddy. So he let me feature for him. We did 6-7 weeks of stand up in a row, no breaks, like 42 shows in 6 weeks. And, which at the time was unheard of to have that much stage time at your hands. And he was like, Simone, I'm going to let you, he goes, I want you to do these shows because you're funny. But here's the thing. I don't want you to do any of your material. I want you to be that guy on stage that makes us laugh in the car. Tell stories about your dad. Tell stories about your brother. Oh, yeah. Don't do that 80s heavy metal or who's drinking tonight comedy. And, cause I had like a lot of like observational comedy. I mean, a lot of it was good. And a lot of it, like I saw other people touch on it, you know, like, but he gave me 6 weeks and I started to work out some like real personal bits. Mm. And then over time I started to do more storytelling and stuff. And then I'm really Catholic. And 1 year for Lent is the 40 days before Easter, you have to give something up. So I was like, oh, I'll give up cursing on stage. And I was like, oh, I don't need it. Like agents and managers would be like, dude, you don't need to curse with your act. I'm like, what do you think? I'm a nerd. Of course I'm going to curse. And then I realized I didn't need it. And then I started to work down at Children's Hospital. Mm. Not work, but I started to get more involved down there. And I was like, oh, I'm not famous enough to be a dirty comedian in case like somebody would be like, who is this guy? They, oh, he's a comedian. Then if they heard me be a foul mouth, I remember I recorded my first album like in 2014 and I gave it to my mom and I realized my mom really couldn't play it for her friends in Florida. Yeah. So I said, and there was only a couple curses on it, but the next album, I told stories about my mom. And I made it completely clean so she could play it for her friends.
That's awesome. You know, my dad has a saying is that people who use curse words aren't intelligent because they can't find anything else to say. So it's like, and I to put that into mind and to try to carry yourself like that, it's a challenge to you sometimes because once you have that sort of vernacular, it doesn't really change.
But it's weird. I think part of my, and I really didn't want to be this honest because I don't like when some comedians are like, I don't need that language or that's beneath me. No. Honestly, part of my logic was looking at that Comedy Store lineup and I'm like, where's my niche?
Yeah. Like, where am I different? What do I,
where am I different? I'm like, I'm not going to ever be funnier than Joey Diaz. It's just not going to happen. You know what I mean? Like there was murderers on the Comedy Store lineup. You had Joe Rogan, Joey Diaz, Chris D'Elia, boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, I'll just come out and be like, who likes ice cream? You know what I mean? Like, how can I differentiate myself? How can I be? And I did, even one of the best decisions I made early on, even when I was doing like rah-rah comedy, observational stuff, I made it, distinction very early on to be joyful. Good. To be joyful on stage because I was so miserable off stage. And I knew part of the reason why I was so miserable was because I was pursuing comedy, meaning I moved 3,000 miles away from my family. Yeah. I didn't have any money. That'll ruin your. So I went, if I gave up my whole life for that 3 minutes on stage, I better enjoy it. So even though I would curse, I was still joyful. And then I remember reading an interview with Jim Carrey and he was talking about the late, great Rodney Dangerfield being so bitter at the end. And in Jim's opinion, he said, the problem when you think comedically is that you think what's wrong. In order for something to be funny, something's got to be wrong with it. And he said, so when you train your brain to think like that, when you train your brain to think comedically, it'll make you angry and bitter. So I went, I don't want that. So I want to be joyful. And then I went, what's right? I know I could be a comedian that points out stuff that's right and still be funny. Yeah. So I did that. And then the final piece was having the courage to not curse. Which was honestly cursing for me, it was a safety net. It was a crutch.
Really?
And yeah, because it worked. And I was also like, you know, I'm a comedian. I was freakishly insecure. You know, if I didn't hear a laugh, I'd be yeah. And the audience would be like, you got that right.
Dude, I'm telling you something right now. I've been on stage 1,000 times. I started playing music when I was 13 years old.
Live. Whoa.
And
what kind of music?
Everything. I mean,
that's awesome.
Except at the time, I didn't appreciate like country or jazz. So it's like, I'm a punk rock kid. So I did.
That's cool.
Anything that came from, I hate my parents, but I love my keyboard. So
build me a ramp or I'm leaving this house.
That's right. It was just me and my mom growing up, but she gave me everything. We were super tight growing up, but
awesome.
Yeah. So I've had those moments on stage where you play a song and you're at a popular pub and there's 5 people in the room and you want to shoot yourself. It's like, this is killing me physically, mentally. I'm having a breakdown, especially with that insecurity, because I identify with that a lot. It's crazy.
Yeah, I used to think that musicians had it easier in situations like that because you could more or less hide behind your music.
Yeah.
But then what I started to realize, the beauty of comedy is, in order for it to be good, it's got to be authentic and it has to be honest.
It's gotta be you.
So you have to, and you got to acknowledge the vibe in the room, you know, and that as an early comic, when there was 6 people in the audience and I came out like it was packed with 400 people and I had no material, it didn't work. And then over years, I remember Andrew Dice Clay was I went from fan to being mentored by him. And he was like, you got to build it, Stevie. He goes, you got to acknowledge what's going on. You got to build it. And it was great. I don't think Dice gets enough credit for being a comedic genius. Yeah, I think a lot of people are dismissive. He is.
My Rushmore. He'd be on mine.
Dude, I feel so blessed to have seen, to have been at the Comedy Store for 20 years. Yeah. Because it's like, in my opinion, stand-up comedy is a very intimate art form, if indeed it is an art form. But the more intimate it is, the more powerful, dynamic, entertaining. Like, all these people want to see Chappelle at the Hollywood Bowl. And I'm like, the next night he was at the Comedy Store in front of 200 people. Like, that's where you see Chappelle.
Yeah.
Anyway, I saw Dice. Dice did one of the best things I've ever seen in comedy. And he was like, you know, trying to teach, he was always there to teach us comics a lesson in a lot of ways. And, whoa, the lights all just went out. That's weird.
It's getting electric.
So what's going on with these? I guess, put light bulbs in. That's crazy.
Well, you know, I got a lot of positive energy and, you know, wires hanging around. So it could be.
Wow. They all went out. 3 out of, all right. Anyway. Dice, I saw the best was seeing Dice go up late, like his album, The Day of the Laughter Died, where instead of, you know, 20,000 people, he did an album late night at Dangerfields in front of 12. So Dice would love to go on the original room when the audience was scattered. Anyway, I don't know, it's maybe 30 people in the room. And guy's kind of heckling them. He's like, oh, I'm not funny. Dice is like, really? You think that? Do you think I'm even trying right now?
Yeah.
What do you think? This is the A material I'm giving you? He goes, how about this? How about this? Right now, feel the vibe. Nothing. What if I were to tell you 3 minutes from now, you'd be laughing so hard, the back of your head would be hitting the chair behind you. Okay. Maybe I'm wrong. So Dice just starts to build it. He starts to build it. He starts murdering.
Yeah.
Murdering.
Yeah.
3 minutes later, he turns around, to that guy and he goes, hey, F face. Remember what I told you? Nobody F's with dice. Dice does the effing.
Yep.
And the plate, the roof flew off the OR. It was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. One of my favorite, I saw Joey Diaz once follow, I think it was, I don't even know. That's how good of a set it was. But it was right before he got cast in The Longest Yard. So this is a long time ago.
2004 or 5 probably, right?
Yeah. Joey crushed the OR so hard. Chris Rock at the peak of his powers was just like, I don't want to go on. I just want to watch this.
Wow.
And I think that really helped him get cast in that movie. And it wasn't that, I don't even think it was Chris going, I can't follow this. I think it was him going, I am watching a volcano of comedy right now. Watching a hurricane. Yeah, that's why you do comedy. It's just all about having laughs.
Yeah, exactly.
I would much rather have somebody make me laugh. I don't need to be the center of attention. Like, when I'm on podcasts normally, I just be quiet. My normal nature is introvert, shy, stare at my feet, don't bother anybody. But if everybody's a bunch of stiffs, I'm like, all right, well, we got to have some laughs. I'm not a wet blanket. All right, I'll get it going. Right? Like, that's what it is.
I don't want you to be quiet on this show, okay? Let me make that clear.
We're becoming buddies. When you come down to Florida to do those shows, we're going to hang out and get lunch, okay?
They're canceled.
Oh, that sucks.
You want to know why? Let me tell you something, Florida. I'm sick of your weather, okay? Why?
I was going to take you to this place called Lenny's.
But hey, I'm still coming down, though.
Are you still coming down?
I got some friends I want to visit, so let's definitely.
Because there's a great deli in Clearwater called Lenny's. It's delicious. And then if you want to go to St. Pete, there's a place called Mazzaro's. It's legit delicious too.
Really?
Yeah, they're probably my two favorite places to eat in Florida.
I had a taco for the first time in Clearwater this past year.
Was it good?
It was amazing, dude.
Really? Okay, good. I need more taco spots in Florida. That's what I miss about L.A. I hated the restaurants, but the taco trucks in L.A. were fantastic. Legit. You had to go to the truck, though.
Yeah. How long were you in L.A. for before you decided?
20 years.
Oh, right, because you were at the comedy show for 20 years. What made you decide to move down south?
COVID, my parents, Joey Diaz, bunch of things.
Yeah, Joey, when he made that move, that was kind of a sign.
Everybody got out. When Rogan, I remember seeing Rogan, they asked him, why are you leaving Los Angeles? And this was like in 2020.
Yeah.
And he said, he was like, because I'm afraid there won't be a Los Angeles in 6 months. Yeah. And like now, I got to be, I'm very honest, dude. Like, I love the Comedy Store. I love LA. I miss it. There are things I really do miss that I didn't think I would miss. But every time I go back, I'm like, was this a good idea? Like, I want to go back. I'll probably go back in the next couple weeks. I mean, the game plan is to get out once a month for 5 days and just do spots at the store. God willing, I'll be able to do that. But every time I go, I get a little nervous. Like, is this when the earthquake's going to hit? Or is this when somebody's, is there going to be a riot? Or is something going to get burned? Is somebody going to get shot? Like, it doesn't feel good there. I'm sorry to say that.
I live in Keene, New Hampshire, and it has never been more busy. Like, I see more and more people on the street, and it used to be a quiet town. And then all of a sudden, it's like, I mean, my friend got shot last weekend, just this past weekend.
I'm so sorry, dude.
And you know what's ironic and a little creepy?
Yeah.
He got killed in the same house as another friend of mine, like on the anniversary of his death. It was crazy. Like, he died in the same house on the anniversary. It's like, what is happening to my town? And at that point, it's like, you got to say to yourself, where am I supposed to be? You know, it's nuts, man. It's nuts.
It's funny you mention that, because a dear friend, I live like, what to me it was the middle of nowhere when I moved here. Like, because like I thought I was gonna be in Florida for 2 months, 3 months.
Yeah.
I was like, let me check in on my parents, hang out with them. I'll rent a place at the beach. And I was like, I'll be back in LA I like Pasadena a lot.
Yeah.
I love it. I was like, and rent will be down because everybody's leaving LA. So rent will be sure to be down and I'll rent a dope spot in Pasadena.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. And then LA kept on getting worse. Mm-hmm. And rent kept on getting more expensive.
Yep.
And then I was like, interest rates are so low on houses. Let me do that.
Yeah.
And just maybe get an investment going or something. Move my parents in so I know they're taken care of. Mm-hmm. And then I just never went back. And I moved to where I could afford a house, like out in the country. But even this feels like not the cut. This feels, when I went from 20 million to 100,000 people, I'm like, this is a small, this is nothing. Right. Now I go, I want to go 3 hours away from here.
Yeah.
Like I'm looking to buy a farm, and my dream is to be 3 hours from Philly on a farm. The place in Florida, and then go to New York and go to LA whenever I have to and be on the road.
Yeah,
Ocala. But I never thought I'd be. Yeah, I love Ocala.
Yeah.
But even that's way more. I was at Ocala years ago at Folly Shore, and it was like a real horse town. Not anymore.
Yeah.
This whole, I live in Central Florida. The whole region's exploded. I live in a place called Polk County, and it's like the fastest growing county in Florida.
Wow.
And I'm like, I love it. I understand why everybody's here. I get it.
Sure.
It's clean. It's safe. The people are really nice.
They are.
Like,
they're so sweet.
They're
so sweet. And like, I never expected to walk into that taco joint and have anybody talk. Like, Florida is an interesting state. Okay.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, from like Fort Myers to where you're at is a complete different level. It's crazy, but it's.
Oh, like where I live. Like my only experience with Florida by and large was like opening up for Paulie on the East Coast of Florida, like West Palm,
yeah.
Miami.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it was all like, you know, roided out chiropractors dating girls half their age. Like all these guys, like 50-year-old dudes on HGH. And I'm like, I don't want to get beat up.
We're going to the club to see who?
Yes. So I was like, I don't like Florida. Then my parents retired to the Gulf Coast. Over by Tampa.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
So I really liked coming to hang out with them. And then I was like, well, let me go to the middle of nothing. Because one of my best friends from LA moved here. He grew up here. And he was like, this is the secret spot.
Yeah.
He was like, it's close to both coasts. The hurricanes don't hit it. It's affordable. Everybody's nice. It's got a great sheriff. I'm like, really? And I'm grateful to be here, but now I want to further away from society.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. It's because I want a different sense of community because I live up here in the sticks, so there's not a lot of people in general, but it's like
I think my old roommate was from Keene.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
God rest his soul. James Price Jr. He was in a bunch of movies.
I was gonna say, why do I know that name? What movies has
he was? He was on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh,
he was in a movie. He had a couple appearances on that.
Wow.
He was. I forget what other sitcoms. I know he's in a movie called Hanging in Hedo. God rest his soul. He was such a character and such a sweetheart.
That's nuts. And he's from Keene. What a small world.
I'm pretty sure that's where he was from because I remember he had. A license plate. Are you guys the Live Free or Die license plate?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. Because he had personalized plates that said doo-wop.
Doo-wop.
He was like, yeah, like doo-wop music. And his dream was like to be in, he would walk away from acting and stand up if he could be in Sha Na Na, which is like this retro doo-wop group thing. Uh-oh, my phone. You still there?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. All right. So yeah, James, God rest his soul, is one of the sweetest, funniest. And I remember mentioning Keene. It's kind of beautiful there, right? There's a couple like low key celebrities live up there.
Oh my gosh. Let's see. Steven, not up here.
Steven Tyler.
Steven Tyler does live in New Hampshire. He's got a house near Sunapee.
Okay. Yeah. It's so funny. People always want to dime out what celebrity, like let them have their peace and quiet.
They're humans. They're humans.
Yeah. Just let them chill.
And I mean, I wanted to ask you about.
Go ahead.
A couple of things. I don't want to run out of time. I'm like in my head.
Ask whatever, dude.
Okay. So the storytelling comedy. Mm-hmm. When did that kind of come into your life? Or when did it come into everybody's life? Because it kind of, my thing was when Ari started This Is Not Happening, that became a really big thing.
Huge.
And that's how I started watching it. And I was like, this is absolutely fantastic. They're just telling stories, but they're so, the audience can pay so much more attention and it's funny.
I hope he takes that on the road. Dude, like, I hope that becomes a real, real tour.
Yeah.
Because he does it in different spots, different, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I always thought storytelling comedy, and it's just a personal opinion, but I always thought storytelling comedy was the best comedy. Mm. Like, I was the type of kid, I saved up when I was 8 years old. My parents said, I was like, can I get a TV for my room? And they're like, no. I'm like, well, what if I save up the money and buy it myself? They're like, okay. And then they forgot they said okay. And like maybe a year later, I was saving all of my money and I would sell gum in school. And like every time I saw my grandma, she'd give me a dollar, or every birthday, all that stuff.
Sure.
It took easily a year. And then like when I started getting closer and closer to my goal, then you start to hustle harder and harder. Like, let me go rake leaves or mow a lawn or. Sure. But I was only 9, so I don't think I started to do that stuff until I was like 13. But I remember being 9 years old and I'd saved up $239. Wow. And going through the Sunday newspaper, there was ads and there was a 13-inch color TV on sale.
Yeah.
And if I bought it in Delaware, I'd have to pay sales tax and get it for, it was a Magnavox. I think it was $219 on sale. Right. So if I went to Delaware, I got to keep $20. And then I just lived in front of that TV and watched comedy. And we were like the first family in the neighborhood to have cable TV. And we'd sit around and watch HBO specials. And then in the 80s, comedy hot. There was like the Comedy Channel and one called Ha. And then they merged to form Comedy Central. And I lived in front of it. So I was a student and a fan of all kinds of comedy. But like my guys, when I was a kid, like Eddie Murphy destroyed, and Eddie Murphy was a storytelling comic. Richard Pryor was a storytelling comic. Bill Cosby was a storytelling comic.
Right.
And I went, oh, that's what comedy is. So it was frustrating at the Comedy Store because my only stage time for that first 7-8 years would be if Pauly took me on the road or 3 minutes. And that's it. Like, it taught me a lot, but I wasn't working out material in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, that's all I just wanted to do was tell stories. And then it took a while to figure it out because I love to mentor young comics. Like, I love it. And I don't know if I'm right. I don't know if any of my theories make sense. And I really don't know if I'm right. But dude, I really think stand-up comedy is different. It's a different language.
Yeah.
Meaning you can make your friend laugh, but that's not stand-up comedy. You have to take what makes your friend laugh and translate it into stand-up comedy.
Right.
Like, how do you get strangers to laugh like your family and friends? And that really, to me, is the approach I take. And that was another thing I stole from Jim Carrey, where he said that was his biggest learning. After 8 years of bombing in the OR, he realized he had to treat the OR like his living room and talk to the audience as if they already knew it. So I took that piece and learned, like, this is what I mean by language of stand-up comedy. If you over-explain something to an audience, it's not funny. But if you under-explain something, it's not funny. And like, I remember being a kid and I'm watching Eddie Murphy. And in my kid brain, I said, what makes Eddie Murphy great is that he verbally gives you the dots that you have to connect in your brain. You're filling in everything he's saying in your brain. So you know why he's making the face. When you're completely connected to an audience, you don't need words. They know what you're thinking. You just go like that.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
So that took a while to learn how to do that, and like a long time. But once you learn how to tell stories to an audience, like, I don't need material. I don't. Yeah. It won't be great the first couple of times, but I can make it work.
Sure.
Like, I remember doing a storyteller show, especially with Ari storyteller shows.
Yeah.
We did those in 2019, I think. And it was me, Ari, Sean Patton, Mark Norman, Joe List. It was, I think, Ren Azizi might have dropped in on one. It was awesome.
Yeah.
But the stories I told, I'd never told in public before.
Is that right?
Well, how did that light just go back on?
You got mice.
Steve, it is on a dimmer switch, but come on, dude.
In there right now.
In the wires, you think?
I don't know, man. That's crazy. Could be. It's Florida. There's probably a hurricane.
Yeah, who knows?
Oh, man. That's crazy, though. No, I'm happy that it came into light and that it's being glorified as a great branch of comedy. Because it really
Yeah, I think it's cool.
You know, I never in a million years expected to see that show, and it was great.
Oh, there was nothing better. Yeah. There was not. Ari and I used to go on our depression walks. And I remember vividly there was one. We must have walked. We maybe walked 8 hours along the beach from south of the pier in Santa Monica.
You walked 8 hours?
I think so. I got to ask him about that.
Oh my it was, gosh.
This would have been like 2008-ish.
Sure.
It was before. It was years before he made it. And we walked from like the beginning of Santa Monica, like the edge of Venice and Santa Monica, north into Malibu on the beach.
Oh my God.
Was all day long. And it was just like, we had to be in nature. We had to keep moving because the depression of not making it.
Yeah.
And then, Ren Azizi went back to New York, and that made me and Ari get like even closer because Mitzi for sure passed Justin Martindale. She saw him at a showcase. And I remember when she passed Aaliyah, when she passed Whitney. But like the last three guys that went through her process of like door guy, parking cars, answering phones, two paid regular were me, Ari, and Ren Azizi. So Ren Azizi was the first to become famous and rich. And then he left. So then it was like me and Ari.
Yeah.
And we got really, really close and closer. And then when he went to New York, that really jump-started his career. Like, I was devastated to see him go. And I didn't think it was going to work. I was like, dude, show business is in LA. It's not New York. He was like, I just want to be a better comic. There's more stage time there. And he became undeniable. And one of my happiest memories in the history of my life was because, I mean, Ari, for real, he didn't think he was going to make it. One of my happiest memories was seeing Ari's billboard on Sunset Strip in front of the apartment he lived in when he didn't think he was going to make it. They say there's no God. Come on, bro.
Please, if you don't believe that, I feel sorry for you.
Like, he really had a billboard on top of Pink Dot that would have blocked his window of the apartment I helped him move into in 2002.
That's nuts.
Nuts.
That's nuts, Steve. When somebody that you love is really rocking and rolling.
It's the greatest.
It's the greatest. You know, my friends, it's like I don't have a band anymore and I miss it. I had a band for 10 years.
That's incredible.
And, you know, we opened for so many people, but we really got close to this one band called Lost in Transit. Lost in Transit.
Mm-hmm.
And they are doing so well right now. Like, locally, they're so phenomenal live. And, you know, even though I'm not in the band anymore, I'm like, I see their progress, and I'm so happy for them.
Yeah.
And the camaraderie of the Comedy Store back when you guys were there, you know, everybody was there. Like, when Ralphie was there, you know.
I rest this all, yeah.
You were there. Like, that is nothing that can be matched again, in my opinion. You know,
and also, I will say this, because who knows who's going to watch this, right? But there might be a young comic and he might be going through it.
Yeah.
But, or somebody, look, man, life will kick your ass, right? That's just how life works. Yep. It will kick your ass. But there's a beauty to the ass kicking, because the people that stand by you when you're getting your ass kicked, they're your real friends.
Yeah.
And like, you know what I mean? Like, if somebody is with you when you have nothing, it's because they like you and they care. Like, they're your real friend. And I think there's something about suffering that just yields amazing fruits.
It's humbling. It's so humbling.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I think about, you know, when you and I first started talking, I sent you a message about Ralphie May.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a friend who, she had just overdosed, and
mm-hmm.
she was going through what Ralphie was going through. Not the same situation, but the same sort of demons.
Yep, and they are demons, yep.
And I thought about that, and I'm like, he's still heralded with those guys. Like, they put him up on the highest pedestal as just a genius in comedy. Like, he had... You know, I think you described him once as having encyclopedia knowledge. And I was like, man, that's so cool to see. Absolutely phenomenal.
Do you know what's even cooler? It's like you can... There's like what somebody does and there's who somebody is, right? And the cool thing about great comedians is what they do and who they are, very, very similar thing. But Ralphie was just such a kind soul. And it's like, I can't think of any of his bits off the top of my head right now. But I can think about the smile he always had and how warm he was to... I mean, I was an open mic nobody.
Yeah.
And I will say this. I think guys that are great comics that are also like Ralphie was, they were so sensitive that they knew when somebody needed a kind word. And I remember once Ralphie saying something to me that was just enough to keep me going. And that I always... Like, I don't sense it all that, but whenever I can give somebody a compliment, I do.
Yeah.
Because you don't know, that might be enough to keep them going.
Yeah, you have to.
You have to.
You have to do that. Because I had Corey from the Smash Brothers on here, and he was
very close to Ralphie.
Oh my God, Steve, he was so gracious in his speech and kind-hearted. And I was like, I'm so honored to have people like that on my show. Just to talk to them and get their stories, because it's like sometimes you don't get the chance to tell all the stories or get the things out that you want to get out with everybody.
Dude, and how many times you were like, oh, I didn't even think of that. Oh, I should have said that or that sort of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, I mean... Like you said, I hope this does reach somebody who needs to hear it, because everybody needs that kick in the pants or that kind word to keep them going. And you know,
yeah, we're all in this together, man. Like, that's the funniest thing. Like,
absolutely.
People think, man, a lot of lost souls in this world.
I wanted to ask you about is Lee's podcast is actually great.
Lee's the best,
dude.
You know, Lee's dad was like a pioneer in talk radio.
Is that
it's
right?
It's in his Dickie Syatt.
Okay.
It's in his genetic code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's crazy. He's, Lee, this is how much of a sweetheart Lee Boom Boom Syed is. He sent Mother's Day flowers to my mom.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we love Lee. There's certain people in this house that can do no wrong that have come to stay with us. And my mom's like, Lee and Ari at the top of the list.
Dude, he actually replied to my tweet once and I was so hyped. I was like, yes.
One moment in time. Yeah, then, he's the sweetest.
And then I was like, oh my God, I want to get him on the show so bad. Cause
I'm sure when he's super busy, but I'm sure,
I'm
like,
sure he is. Yeah.
He's a lot like me. Like, as soon as he has the time, he'll do it.
Dude, he's great. I mean, you know what's phenomenal about him and like the church of what's happening now with him and Joey? I could never see anyone else doing that show but those guys. Ever.
Like, such beautiful chemistry.
Yeah.
Like, Joey treated Lee like a dad or a cool uncle. There was like their family.
Yeah, man.
The love they share is real. It's awesome. And Joey's so, like, I'm so proud of both of them. Like, they both gotten so much healthier in the last couple of years. Both of them. Joey looks great. Lee looks great.
Oh my God, they both have lost so much weight. They look phenomenal.
Yep.
Everybody's losing weight. Joey, me, you know, it's getting there. Shameless plug for me. Anyway, what was your relationship like with Joey when you first met him?
I thought he was the best person I ever met. I think he was the second person to put me on stage at the Comedy Store. First one was Bobby Lee. The second one was Joey Diaz. And I loved Joey so much. I didn't know how to write a movie, but I had an idea for a movie for Joey, but it kind of got ruined because Bad Santa came out and it was so similar, but without any of the heart. I wanted Joey to play Santa Claus.
That's awesome.
To me, Joey Diaz, he's an angel, a prophet. When Joey Diaz told me to move from Los Angeles, I moved. Because I really think he's close to God. And I know, like, there are people that would be horrified with me saying that. But that's because they don't know God. Joey's got the biggest heart. I would say that's probably the one thing one way I know how blessed I've been. Because the people that stay close to me, they all have big hearts. Renazizi. See, Renazizi let me stay at his condo for free for years.
That's amazing.
Like, when I was on the verge of giving up. Yeah. And he was like, how about you don't pay rent so you can survive off of just stand-up money? And on top of that, why don't I pay for acting classes for you?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. What a sweetheart.
Biggest heart in the world.
It's nice to have those guys in your life.
Yeah. Ari Renazizi, Joey. Like, I have this thing kind of. When I became aware of it, I sort of was like a little self-conscious about it, maybe. Like, I don't know, embarrassed. And I don't think it's being naive. But like, when I met, I literally only see the best in people most of the time. Like I just don't see the other stuff. Like, I remember like watching like TV shows and stuff, and you would see like some gang member's grandmother get on the witness stand. She was like, he's the sweetest guy. I don't know what you're talking about. My grandson's just, and I'd be like, she has to say that. Now I'm like, oh no, wait, I'm the same way. Of course. That's all she sees. Like, when I met Joey, like, I remember people were like, oh, that dude went to prison and this. And I'm like, no, he didn't. Like, I thought it was all lies. I just saw this sweetness. Yeah, I was like, that's not true. Because I could feel it. Nobody loves people more than Joey Diaz. It just.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been just as easy for him to move to Jersey and not start a podcast, but he got it going again, and everyone's
awesome.
Everyone's so thrilled.
And he's a saint. He really is a saint.
What are you doing next, Steve Simone? What's going on? Where are you going to?
I'm going to see my buddy. I don't know if we said this on the podcast or before we recorded, but tomorrow I'm so excited. I get to see Brett Ernst.
Right.
I get to go give him a hug. he's in Florida, a couple hours away. Then I drive back, drive to Miami, do shows at a place called the Comedy Inn in Miami Friday night. Then I go hang out with my good buddy, Mr. Vincent Iannelli in South Philadelphia. He's going to be hosting the Italian Festival Grease Pole competition. And he told me not to eat for 2 days because we're going to eat our way through South Philly. I was, Pauly Shore is going to be in town. So I'm going to take Pauly to go out to eat Philly style. Then I get to see all my family in Philly. Sunday is St. Rita's feast day. She's a miracle worker. I want to go pay my respects to St. Rita on Sunday. I fly back Sunday night. And then I'm going to try to get to LA for a couple days, God willing. And then I do shows at the Comedy Works in Denver the first weekend in June. And by then, hopefully I'll have some notes on a feature script I wrote. And
wow, great.
I got a couple guys that maybe want to put up some money for a special. So hopefully I'll have some more details about that.
That's great, bro.
Yeah, but the truth is just every day I'm waking up being grateful. I get to live under the same roof as my parents, which is such a blessing.
Oh, it's a joy.
It's the greatest. I have bird feeders in my backyard. I'm like an old man. I'm like Tony Soprano waiting for the ducks. I'm looking at my pool. I'm feeding birds. I was the fattest I've been since I gave up boozing all the time. The Saturday before Easter, because I got my mom, like, ask Ari about how we eat here. Like, I was so fat, I look like Clemenza. I was like, I'm done. So I started to run, and I've been fasting, and I hooked up my juicer again.
Clemenza, the guy that was in The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh?
No. Pisces, get down. Pisces, get down. Dude, speaking of basketball movies, have you seen that HBO Max show, Showtime, or whatever they're calling it?
I heard
about it. It's legit awesome. It's great. It's my favorite show on TV.
For me to get into a show, I have to. I'm such a dummy when it comes to these things. I'm like a turtle. It's like I have to get mentally prepared.
No, I get that.
Because it's like I don't want to take something on if I'm not going to be interested. And then by the time you're in the third episode, you're like, I'm going to jump out my apartment window and it's going to be over.
Yeah. Well, after this, I my girlfriend's never seen The Sopranos.
Excuse me.
So we watched and she's so into it. So right now she's like, hurry up with that podcast. Okay. I have ice cream. Let's watch The Sopranos.
Sounds good. I will. We're right here. We'll lay it right here. We can stop. But before we leave, do you have anything you want to say about your Help Steve Help company?
Sadly, I haven't been dealing much with that. I'm going to be honest.
I gotcha.
I've been blessed that some very successful comedians will reach out and they'll say, I have money and I want to help a family. And there is always somebody to help.
Great.
But COVID like knocked me for a loop, gotcha. You know? So,
yeah, you're not alone, my friend. And, I just want to say, you know, it's among other things, it's been an honor talking to you and getting to know you over the show.
Dude, are you going to be in Florida next week for real? Yes, cause if so, let's 100%. Go eat. Let me buy you lunch. It'll be fun.
I'm buying you lunch, player. You just buy
I'm buying you lunch.
Okay,
we'll go. Dude, this was awesome. Thank you so much.
You're the best, Steve. Thank you. And thank you.
All right, God bless.
For tuning in.